Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from thousands of successful individuals from around the world. I'm your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm delighted to welcome a technology entrepreneur and author from India, Mr. Anirudh Suri. Anirudh, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Ashutosh. Pleasure to be on.
Thank you. Anirudh is an author of a book titled The Great Tech Game. He's also the managing partner of the India Internet Fund. He's a venture capitalist, technology leader, entrepreneur, and policy advisor. And earlier, he has been a Goldman Sachs global leader. So Anirudh, we'll talk about two things today. One is your India Internet Fund, and the second is your book. So let's start with your fund. Tell me a little bit more about the India Internet Fund.
Sure. Thanks, Ashutosh. So the India Internet Fund is an early stage venture capital fund. Focused on technology startups. We were set up almost a decade ago now, about 9-10 years ago, and set up as a US and India-based venture capital fund. And we have a sister fund focused on the US market. India Internet Fund is our fund focused on the Indian market, but to be honest, now it has expanded to be really focused on India and Southeast Asia. We've done investments now across our both sister funds across the US and Asian geographies over the last decade, investing in both B2B and B2C companies, and over 120 odd companies now across the two geographies. About 20-25 of those are in India, and we've had quite a range of investments across fintech, media, entertainment tech, retail tech, a lot of data-focused companies, SaaS-focused companies that are both trying to build for India, but also for the world.
Terrific.
And as I mentioned, because we have these two geographies that we work across, we also work with a lot of US companies looking to enter India, and a lot of Indian companies looking to go global.
Wonderful. So what do you look for before you decide to make an investment?
See, Ashutosh, because we are early stage investors, there's a few specific things that we look for that maybe a later stage investor does not look for as much, right? And there are some things that they'll have access to in terms of performance data and financial data by the time the company goes to their stage that we don't have when we are looking at it.
Absolutely.
Because the company is in early stage. So, you know, like other early stage investors will also tell you this, there are two or three main things that you're evaluating for at this point. One is, there's usually a broad macro thesis that we have in mind about certain subsectors or certain markets within the broader tech space. Right? So we're looking for alignments on that front. That's one.
So would you like to give an example, Sage, for our viewers and listeners, what kind of sectors would you be looking at?
Sure. So, you know, over time, we continue to develop and evolve our own theses on what kind of companies we believe are likely to do well given the macro environment, right? So back in the day, for example, when we started, we believed that there was a very interesting opportunity for US-based companies to come to India to set up their India arms, right? Because now I'm talking over a decade ago, when the Indian startup ecosystem itself was not as mature as it is today. And so that time our thesis was, let's find interesting entrepreneurs or companies that are starting up there that could grow much faster in India if they were brought here. So companies like Savan, for example, come to mind, which we were early advisors and investors in, which started off in the US, but then of course grew very rapidly in India subsequently in this decade.
Correct.
Right. And then was acquired by Jio. Now that's one example. I can give you another example where sometime in the mid part of this past decade, we realized that Indian SaaS companies were starting to achieve a certain cachet in the global market. And the team of product developers here was actually now much better. And hence, we believe that a lot more SaaS companies could be built out of India for the world.
Okay.
Right. So that's another kind of example, or I would say a thesis-driven focus that we developed. Right. We are now increasingly looking at climate tech, biotech. Right, as areas of focus, because we believe that's an interesting area now that's likely to develop. So we'll often have these kinds of theses that we work on that, of course, we develop as partners in the fund, basis what we are seeing in the market, both in the US and here.
Very well said. And what is the approximate ticket size that you normally look at?
So we typically invest an early check of anywhere between 200K to 500K, Ashutosh. Mm-hmm. That's our typical sort of sweet spot. And then later we'll sometimes come in selectively in certain companies to follow on with slightly larger sums in subsequent rounds.
Fascinating. And my next question to you is that as an early stage investor for obviously an early stage founder, what is the level of involvement you have in running the business or getting involved with the business, especially from a governance perspective?
Sure. So see, we see it as a almost like I'll draw an analogy for you. Like we see it as a baby, right? For us. Now, our parental philosophy, so to say, is to not interfere too much in the you know startup's development unless they express a need or we see a clear need, right? So typically we're not involved in the day-to-day operations or the day-to-day decisions that the company or the entrepreneur or the founding team are making, right? Because that's not really our prerogative. But at the same time, often we are ready to roll up our sleeves and do whatever is needed as soon as the entrepreneur expresses a need.
Okay.
Right. So in many cases, our entrepreneurs or founders have said that, listen, Anirudh, we need some help with business development focused work in the US market, or we want to flip to Singapore. Can you help us manage that process? Right. So in both cases, what we'll do is either connect them to a bunch of people, in the case of, let's say, business development, to a bunch of companies that we'll know that could be potential clients, either from our own portfolio in the US or outside of that through our own networks. In the case of a company that, let's say, wants to do a structural change, flip from India to the US or Singapore or any such kind of structural change, then again, we have a set of professional advisors that we work with who can then help the company very quickly do that process, who have had that experience, etc. So that's the kind of typical kind of assistance that we'll help with. And then, of course, at the exit stage as well, or a subsequent fundraising stage, that's something, again, that we have a deep sort of experience with. And so an entrepreneur looking for help on that front, again, we are happy to help with.
Fascinating.
Sort of taking them faster than they otherwise might.
Wonderful. And like any early stage investor, at what stage do you look for an exit?
See, again, that's a there's not a standard sort of rule of thumb there. We really look for exiting when we believe the right time is right for us, and usually that time is right for us when we believe that we've seen through the kind of upside that we believe there is in the company, and where we continue to exercise and hold sort of some kind of strategic value to the startup as well. Right? And then there comes a time when there's a larger investor, larger venture capital fund, or larger PE fund that's required to really take the company forward, at which point we might then choose to exit.
Okay.
Because both our value add has gone down, and second, we feel like we've seen a significant upside already and we want to now exit and then maybe take some of that return and then reinvest that into other earlier stage companies. Right? So there's really no rule of thumb per se, but we take a call basis every startup individually. Sure. You know.
I agree. And my last question before I move to your book is, you know, like every early stage investor, and I'm also an early stage investor. As you look back, tell me about the few that got away and that you see, I wish I had invested in those.
Or the few that we missed.
Yeah.
Oh, there are many. There are many, I would say. I'll name a few. But, you know, the last decade, as you know, has been hyperactive, especially the last 4 or 5 years have been hyperactive. From a startup eco standpoint. So of course you've missed many that have gone on to become large companies.
Yeah.
So Ola comes to mind, first of all. First up, I would say Ola. You know, Bhavish and I, we were in Bombay at the same time, early on. This, I'm now talking about 2012, 2013. We were in fact in the same office for some time. In Lower Parel. And so, of course, I knew him well at that time and was seeing the kind of growth that Ola was also experiencing. And on the other side, we were also early stage investors not through the fund, but as individuals in Uber,
okay,
partners and the folks involved with our fund in the US markets. Of course, we have a cab market, you know, that specific market grow very rapidly. And so that's one that I would say we missed for a couple of reasons. One, you know, by the time we were ready to invest or look like we had the opportunity to invest, it was already a bit too late for us from a focus standpoint. But not too late. When you look back at it, it was not too late. But at that point, it seemed like it was already too late, right? From an early stage standpoint. And I think that that's probably a big miss, I would say, that I can point to. And then there have been many others. Have been many others in content entertainment space, friends of mine sometimes where we didn't invest because we were very close friends and I didn't want that to color, you know, our investment. Strategy as well, and so there have been many.
Some of your big successes, you mentioned Savan as one option, as one, but maybe one or two of the other ones that our viewers and listeners can identify with.
Yeah, so Savan obviously is a popular one, given many of us have used that app. But there's another one that has done exceptionally well for us. They're also, I think, a unicorn now, etc. But they started very small in India. We were one of the first investors in this company called Tala, which is used to be called Inventure. We were one of the early investors in the first angel type round, along with Eric Schmidt of Google and a couple others. And this company started off in the US, but was one of those companies that I was mentioning. We helped and encouraged them to the US, to India, because they were focused on building alternative credit scoring mechanism for the unbanked at the time. Right. And fintech was not hot at that time at all. This is again, I'm talking about the 2012, 2013 timeframe again. And they built out an alternative credit scoring mechanism basis data available on the phone for people who were mobile phone users, but not bank account holders. And Tala is now a global company, starting as they did very small out of Bombay and Bangalore. Now global company likes of Chris Sacca of Twitter fame and that are now on their board. Several marquee Silicon Valley investors are now on their cap table, etc. They've raised about $300 million, I think, overall over the last few years. They've done exceptionally well. And we believe, while we've exited from some other companies where we've had the chance, here to your earlier question about when we exit and how we think about exits, Tala is a company we've stuck on, in fact, double down on, because we believe that there's a lot of upside still in that.
Fantastic. Thank you. That was an amazing conversation about the India Internet Fund. But now let's move to your book, The Great Tech Game. Tell me about your book and your hypothesis when you wrote it.
Sure. The starting point, Ashutosh, really for the book was that, you know, as I mentioned, and as we've been discussing, I've been in the tech VC world, tech startup world now almost for the last decade here in India. And before that, I'd spent a bunch of time working with McKinsey, in New York, a little bit of time at Goldman in London, a stint with the Indian government here in Delhi in the IT ministry, and then also a think tank in DC called the Carnegie Endowment in Washington. And so I'd had a bunch of these diverse experiences, I would say, prior to being in the tech VC world as well, that have helped shape my own thinking about how tech is shaping the world, right? And to me, that view in my head, at least, was always broader than what we sometimes have in the tech VC world, day-to-day work that we do, right? And I was worried, to be honest, in the back of my mind that the tech VC world, the tech startup world, founders, investors, we were all looking at the tech, at the impact of tech from a very narrow standpoint of startups, valuations, unicorns, etc. And in my head, given my other experiences as well, I was seeing a lot of dots connect in the back of my mind between how tech was shaping geopolitics, foreign policy, national security, of course, domestic politics, societal changes. It was shaping, in my mind, the economic competitiveness of nations very broadly. And a lot of these dots were sort of connecting in my head, but I wasn't seeing that happen in the discourse around me, right? In the public discourse around me. So really the starting point for me to write the book was to say that, listen, I want that conversation to be a little bit broader a little bit more, I would say, historical in its contextualization as well, and for it to be, the conversation to be much more broad based in terms of who was having that conversation. Today, the conversation around tech is largely driven by tech venture capitalists and tech founders.
Correct.
And to some extent, folks in the government. Right? But I think that there's a much broader conversation needed in India about the impact of tech, bringing in historians, bringing in scientists, bringing in philosophers, bringing in psychologists, bringing in, of course, sociologists, etc. And so that is, in a nutshell, the starting point of why I wrote the book. And now to tell you a little bit about the book itself, how it's evolved. You know, the book is a, I would say, a broad framework for anyone today, whether you're in the tech world or not, to understand the scale, breadth, and depth of how tech is shaping our world from three main standpoints. One is, how is tech shaping our economic competitiveness as nations, right? I draw parallels with the industrial era and other earlier great games, as I call them, the great agri game, the great trading game, the great colonization, industrialization games, where I say that today we're living in this great tech game, which is a new era altogether. And nations will emerge as winners in this, will depend on, much like in earlier games, will depend on who, which nations understand the game the best, the broad game, not just a single aspect of it, and which countries then develop the right capabilities or the game plan, so to say, to win in that great game. And I'm happy to come back to that, but that is a key part of the book, that's the, on the economics, right? Then there's the geopolitical or the foreign policy side, where I talk that talk about how geopolitics is being shaped, the future of our world order, future of war, future of alliances in the world is being shaped by technology. Which countries have the tech capability today end up becoming a lot more attractive as friends and partners on the world stage today. That wasn't necessarily the case, let's say, a few decades ago, and so on and so forth.
That's it.
The third final aspect in the book is the societal one, where I argue that we talk a lot about the geopolitics of tech today, especially in the last couple of years, given developments in the US and China, Russia, Ukraine, etc. A lot of talk of geopolitics of tech, but, and to some extent, the economics also, right? But what is not being talked about enough is, how is the tech era, or the great tech game, shaping our society? The industrial era, again, serves as a good analog. It massively shaped our society, right? The ramifications of which to continue to deal with. In terms of our family size, our cities, our energy choices, and so on and so forth. Who are the elites? Who are not? Which are the values that hold sway in our society? And so similarly today, the great tech game is shaping all of those things. Our society, our values, our behavior, our family structures, etc. And we're not talking enough about that. Right. And so that's really the broad frame that the book provides to any reader. And of course, goes into more detail if, you know, people are so inclined.
No, so I think these three points you've just given me are so fascinating. But let me try and touch upon one of them, which is, you know, you spoke about geopolitics and the power of tech to make a country attractive or maybe not so attractive. Tell me a little bit more about what would be some of the key drivers that will determine the ability of a nation to succeed in a tech-dominant area.
From an economic standpoint or from a geopolitical standpoint?
From an economic standpoint.
From an economic standpoint. From an economic standpoint, one of the main things I argue in the book also, Ashutosh, is that we must not look at just from an Indian standpoint, for example, though this will apply to any country really. From a country standpoint, we must not think very narrowly about how we are faring in this great tech game by simply looking at, let's say, the number of unicorns that we have or the number of, let's say, internet users that we have. Right, that's a very narrow view of seeing whether you are succeeding or not. As I've said now multiple times the last couple of months in the conversations I've had around the book, that, you know, India was the jewel in the British crown also, because we were a big market that time. We were a big resource base and a big consumer market even at that time, in that era. But that didn't necessarily mean that the benefits of that great industrialization game accrued largely to us, right? It accrued very disproportionately small measure to us, right? And similarly, in the tech game, I argue that what is the key driver of today, the benefits accruing to you? Of course, the consumer market helps you, right? We have massive unicorns. That's a good thing. We are generating employment. We're generating, of course, some amount of value for the consumer also, and for the entrepreneurs and the teams working in these companies, etc. But more importantly, what we need to focus on is who's owning the core tech IP that actually leads to massive accumulation of wealth, right? So I often use this example that if you were to combine the balances of on the balance sheets of all our unicorns, let's say 100 unicorns that we might have in India today, will that as a total end up being more than the cash balance on the balance sheet of even one of the big tech firms in the US? No. And so unless we talk about that, right, where is the wealth accruing? The wealth will accrue to companies that have moats built around technology that they own. So do you own the operating systems? Do Indian companies build and own the operating systems that underlie large marketplaces like the Android marketplace and the Apple iOS marketplace? No. Do we own the core software layers in the global IT services space? No, we are service providers and integrators of the software and implementers of those solutions, but we don't own the basic technology that is actually being implemented, like the you know, the core technology that is leading to massive wealth. So TPS, of course, is something we have to be very proud of. Wipro and Infosys, we have to be very proud of as a nation. But I think we have to, now we are at a point where we can take that next step, that next leap as a nation. That's number two. Number three, I would say, is the fact that we have to make sure that we think of the digital economy much more broadly than just the tech sector sitting in Bangalore or Gurgaon.
Correct.
Right? Our entire economy, again, we'll use the industrial example as an analog. It's easy to understand. You know, 300 years ago, Ashutosh, we were making a transition. Now, in retrospect, we see it. That time, it might not have been so clear. We were making this transition from an artisanal, agri, rural-based economy to a more industrial economy as we know it today, right? As it has panned out. The early industrializing nations that time industrialized their entire economies, not just a sector or a city or, you know, industrialized their entire economies, right? So today, again, as that transition from industrial to a digital economy is happening, we must think of tech as a factor that has to be leveraged across the entire economy, whether in agriculture, healthcare, education, etc. Tech is not a sector. In my view, right?
Well,
it's a factor of production, like capital. So that has to be the viewpoint that we bring to the table. So these are some of the pieces I would highlight.
It's a great response.
A game plan for a country.
Yeah, it's a great response. And I have time for one more question, Anirudh. So I'm going to ask you a question for our many, many viewers and listeners. What would you say are three lessons you would want our viewers to take away from our conversation on the tech sector and your book?
Sure. So for entrepreneurs who are listening in, Ashutosh, I would say that focus on emerging tech waves within the broader tech space and not just stay focused on the wave that has already maybe passed, right? There are some waves within this broader tech game. So if the B2C internet search platform has been developed, you know, you have a leader, there's no reason to say, okay, you can't challenge them. But my advice would be also look at emerging tech waves, whether it's in climate tech or biotech, or of course, more recently, what we've been talking a lot about in the tech VC world is Web3, right? And blockchain and crypto. But look at these emerging tech waves and choose or figure out interesting ideas or innovations in these emerging waves. That I think is one piece of advice I would say, because the winners always change as the waves change, as new games come about. So keep an eye on the next wave. That's one from an entrepreneur standpoint. From an investor standpoint, I would say, an Indian investor standpoint in particular, I would say that we as investors, and this is again as much a lesson to me as to maybe others in my domain, is that we have to have a focus on not just investing in the application layer of software. We must have a little bit more patient capital in the case of India to invest in the core tech. Companies building core tech, building deep tech, or building layers of software that are maybe not as visible to the consumer, but are core components of the entire software stack globally. And that might require a little bit more patient capital, might require a change of focus, might require us to understand some of these things better than we do so far. But we have to do that, because that's what really will yield supersized returns for us as an investor. That's number two, I would say. And the third one, I think I'll just give out as a general advice for young professionals who are listening.
Yeah.
That this game is changing. if it has not already changed. Right? Mm. The game is changing. Mm. As we've been discussing now over the last few minutes, mm. the game is changing. Make sure you understand the game. I think the worst thing that can happen to young professionals who are starting out their careers mm. is that they don't understand the game fully
yeah.
when they enter. Mm. And when they don't understand the game, they'll either choose a profession or a sector or a you know, set of people to work with, mm. which might not be the right one to win in this game, what mm. we are living through. So mm. I would say that, you know, take that time to develop an understanding of what the overall big picture game is mm. under sort of underway, and then find your place in it, right? And it doesn't mean you have to be a tech entrepreneur
yeah.
or a tech investor. That's not the only way to engage in this great tech game. Mm. Today, marketeers, sales folks, PhDs, academics, scientists, philosophers, as I was saying earlier, you know, the reason I wrote the book was that we need a whole wide range of people to be oriented to this new game to help us understand the game and then make the right choices. So I would say, as a young professional, hopefully read the book if it'll be helpful,
yes, of course.
But also try and understand the great tech game broadly so that you can make the right professional career choices and personal choices. I spent a little bit of time in the book also, Ashutosh, I must mention towards the end, where I talk about the personal choices that we need to make to engage with tech and to shape tech in a way that aligns with our values. We can't let tech only shape us.
Mm.
It has to be a two-way street where the design of tech, the use of tech, the choices we're making around that as a society, as individuals, as families, must be proactive. It can't be very passive only.
Correct. How interesting. And on that note, let me first start by saying thank you so much for speaking to me and talking to me about the amazing work that you've been doing, supporting so many companies on the India Internet Fund. Thank you for speaking to me about your book, The Great Tech Game. I'm going to reach out. I'm going to check out on Amazon and order one copy for myself. And I'm going to ask all our viewers and listeners to check it out and then take a call, because very seldom do you get a book that is able to give a perspective on technology, which seems to be exciting every one of us, irrespective of how much understanding we have or not. And thank you again for sharing the three lessons, which I think will be of tremendous value for each one of us. Thank you again and good luck.
Thank you very much, Ashutosh, for having us, having me on this chat. And thank you for doing something like this. I think it's an excellent platform to bring a lot of folks and share their sort of life perspectives and career perspectives with your listeners. So thank you for taking the time to do it.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.